All right, welcome back to Understanding Propaganda, the only show on the internet that'll teach you how to decipher the garbage that we are being inundated with daily from our allegedly trusted news agencies. My name is Corey Hughes. Thank you for tuning in. Today what we're going to talk about is the doctrine regarding rumors, which was issued from the Office of Strategic Services. And if you're not aware, the Office of Strategic Services, the predecessor to the CIA, was the primary organization that was in charge of handling propaganda during World War II, not only overseas, but also here in the United States as well. One of the most important concepts that everyone really needs to grasp is that post-World War II, and particularly post-Kennedy, the propaganda arm of the U.S. government was more directed towards disinformation to the people at home here in the United States as opposed to our enemies overseas. So when we go through the documents and we start to talk about the enemy, quote, the enemy, I need you to realize that while during World War II, the enemy, quote, was the Nazis, you need to really understand that today, when you interpret these documents, you have to look at the enemy as us, the American citizenry. It's a hard reality that most people haven't come to grips with yet. But so let me get started. We're going to talk a little bit about the creation of the Office of Strategic Services, Bill Donovan, and then we're going to move on to what I consider one of the most important documents I've ever read, the Doctrine Regarding Rumors. So the Office of Strategic Services, and this is from our old reliable Wikipedia. Remember, Wikipedia is great for the official story. So, the Office of Strategic Services was a wartime intelligence agency of the United States during World War II and a predecessor to the Department of State's Bureau of Intelligence and Research and the Independent Central Intelligence Agency. The OSS was formed as an agency of the Joint Chiefs of Staff to coordinate espionage activities behind enemy lines for all branches of the United States Armed Forces. Other OSS functions included the use of propaganda, subversion, and post-war planning. On December 14, 2016, the organization was collectively honored with a Congressional Gold Medal. Prior to the formation of the OSS, the various departments of the executive branch, including State, Treasury, Navy, and War departments, conducted American intelligence activities on an ad hoc basis, with no overall direction, coordination, or control. The U.S. Army and U.S. Navy had separate code-breaking departments, Signal Intelligence Service and OP-20G, a previous code-breaking operation of the State Department. The MI-8, run by Herbert Yardley, had been shut down in 1929 by the Secretary of State Henry Stimson, deeming it an inappropriate function of the diplomatic arm because, quote, gentlemen don't read each other's mail. The FBI was responsible for domestic security and anti-espionage operations. President Franklin D. Roosevelt was concerned about American intelligence deficiencies. On the suggestion of William Stevenson, the senior British intelligence officer in the Western Hemisphere, Roosevelt requested that William Donovan draft a plan for an intelligence service based on the British Secret Intelligence Service, MI6, and Special Operations Executive, SOE. After submitting his work, quote, Memorandum of Establishment of Service of Strategic Information, Colonel Donovan was appointed the Coordinator of Information on July 11, 1941, heading the new organization known as the Office of the Coordinator of Information. Thereafter, the organization was developed with British assistance. Donovan had responsibilities, but no actual powers, and the existing U.S. agencies were skeptical, if not hostile. Until some months after Pearl Harbor, the bulk of OSS intelligence came from the U.K. British Security Coordination, BSC, trained the first OSS agents in Canada until training stations were set up in the U.S. with guidance from BSC instructors, who also provided information on how the SOE was arranged and managed. The British immediately made their shortwave broadcasting capabilities to Europe, Africa, and the Far East, and provided equipment for agents until American production was established. The Office of Strategic Services was established by a presidential military order issued by President Roosevelt on June 13, 1942, to collect and analyze strategic information required by the Joint Chiefs of Staff and to conduct special operations not assigned to other agencies. During the war, the OSS supplied policymakers with facts and estimates, but the OSS never had jurisdiction over all foreign intelligence activities. The FBI was left responsible for intelligence work in Latin America, and the Army and Navy continued to develop and rely on their own sources of intelligence. So, we're not going to go into the entire history of the OSS today. We're going to tap onto parts of the OSS throughout the course of this podcast because they're so crucial in understanding American propaganda and its origins. So that's just the basic short version of the creation of the OSS. That is pretty factually correct, although vague. When you start to get into the real details of the OSS, you start to get into the various nations that they were cooperating with in order to promote global propaganda. It's really fascinating stuff. We'll cover it in the course of this show. So right now, we're going to move on to, in my opinion, the most important document from the World War II era. I mean, there are a couple other ones, the Doctrine of Terror propaganda and stuff like that, but for the most part, we're going to go into this doctrine regarding rumors, which was written by a guy named R.H. Knapp. And R.H. Knapp, most people probably never heard of, R.H. Knapp is solely responsible for coming up with the techniques and strategies that we ended up implementing in our psychological warfare campaigns since it was authored here June 2nd, 1943. We'll go into R.H. Knapp another time. We're going to do a lot of history over the course of this show on the people responsible for creation of most of this world propaganda that we're familiar with and the result that it's had on the fucking world, which have been devastating. But all right, let's get started here. The Office of Strategic Services Planning Group, the Doctrine Regarding Rumors. This is a cover sheet. Mr. Taylor has submitted the attached memorandum from the MO branch, and that is the Morale Operations branch, together with a second memorandum from the Psychological Warfare staff for consideration of the planning group. In his memorandum of transmittal, he stated, "I am submitting to the planning group a short doctrinal paper on rumors from Mr. Knapp and a somewhat more comprehensive one worked up by members of my staff together with Mr. Knapp. I would have preferred to submit a single paper and suggested to Mr. Knapp that we turn over our material to him for final shaping, but he did not feel he had enough time for this, and we therefore agreed with him to submit both papers, it being felt that his short criteria of a successful rumor might be useful to the planning group for hand reference in connection with rumors submitted, while the longer paper, which he approves in all details, is intended rather for operations in the rumor field. In addition to discussing the contents of the planning staff paper, I think it might be useful to have some discussion as to the distribution and general purpose of the doctrinal papers of this type, as we have several others in mind." And that was written by A.H. Onthank, O-N-T-H-A-N-K, sounds like a false name if you ask me. The use of aliases and body doubles and all that stuff started to really come to fruition under the OSS. Okay. The criteria of a successful rumor. The creation of a successful propaganda rumor is more an accomplishment of art than science. Despite this concession to the intangible character of the good rumor, the following rules are submitted as tentative criteria of the successful story. These rules are neither mutually exclusive nor are they all of equal importance. They are intended merely as necessarily rough guideposts to be used in appraising the merit of a particular example. The successful propaganda rumor, as we define it, is self-propelling in a high degree, retains its original content with a minimum of distortion, and conforms to the strategic requirements. The following are the characteristics of the successful rumor as defined above. The successful rumor is easy to remember. It is sufficiently brief and simple to survive in the memory of successive narrators. It concerns familiar persons, places, and circumstance and incorporates suitable local color. It contains striking concrete detail. It often incorporates stereotype phrase or slogan. It contains a humorous twist when possible. Now, if you've ever seen any of my work on World War II and the Holocaust, I go into great detail in one of my films Psychological Warfare, it's the Holocaust, How Psychological Warfare Shapes Belief and Culture. You might have seen a version of that film that I worked on with Ryan Dawson. My original is still up on Odyssey. You can find it there. But I go over these in a whole lot more detail. And the thing that I find fascinating is that all of these initial criteria of a successful rumor. They kind of pop up again and again throughout history, especially in the modern era. Things like it contains striking concrete detail, right? So that can be related to pretty much everything because they give us, how many details do they give us on things? A lot. Experts say this happened and experts say this could be the result and y'all need to be afraid. Things like that come from this doctrine of rumors.